Hello, friends. Welcome to Healing the Divide. On this podcast episode, I am so grateful to sit down with Emily Iris. And I want to share briefly for those of you who might be new to this show, a little bit about its intention. The name Healing the Divide is really about the exploration of inner work practices applied into a variety of individual, social, collective, cultural, and coupleship contexts, really looking at all the ways as humans we can get stuck in, into ideologies, into particular conventions and norms that can keep us separated from ourselves and each other. And out of a space of curiosity, bringing healing work into spaces where it is most deeply needed, so it's not living in compartmentalized silos. So in this conversation today, it's really an incredible blessing to be sitting down with a dear friend of mine many years, Emily Iris, who embodies this work in really powerful ways. So I'm going to read a brief introduction for Emily. And before I do that, I just want to say hi and thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I always love having a chat with you, for real.
Same. Yeah. I love that I don't know exactly which way this conversation is going to go. Like, it can go through so many little doors. It's a little bit like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride for anybody that was ever like at Disney World in the 80s. That was the best. So that said, Emily Iris is an EFT practitioner and light twerker, now based in Boone, North Carolina, and wherever else she can get Wi-Fi. Emily is a student and teacher of dance, yoga, EFT, and esoteric arts. She's known for bringing her whole self to the things she gets her creative hands on, infusing them with play, insight, and integration. She's currently teaching classes, working as an EFT practitioner, and moonlighting as an adult entertainer. As a woman who has always liked to mix the sacred and the profane, it's no surprise that the themes of spiritual sexuality, playful irreverence, and self-empowerment intersect all of her life and her offerings. Some of her most intense teachers over the past few years have been the portal, that is polyamory, the slowing down, that is mountain life, and the call to show up wholly authentic in all environments for the benefit of all beings. She is currently opening the doors to Tarot Quest, a journey through the archetypes of tarot's major arcana that begins March 20th. I'm sure she'll correct me on the pronunciation. And Emily is also offering one-to-one EFT sessions virtually and also available in her Stan store, and loves to hear from friends on Instagram, where you can find her at the handle at Miss New Bodhi, B-O-D-H-I. All right. That's so much to dive into. I feel like 2 hours is going to be a challenge. So here we go. So buckle up, friends. It's going to be a fun episode. And you know, Emily, you had mentioned in sharing with me these offerings that the deeper through line is this mixture of the sacred and the profane, the spiritual and the sexual. And it's interesting that, like, in the depth of intimacy of our human relationships, these things aren't really so divided. Yet when we bring them out into the world, it's like, and, you know, and everybody's holding their breath and keeping it private, and it gets awkward and it feels funky. And do we talk about this, and how do we bring it out? And is that, you know, like the stigma attached, especially to sexuality, but even taking it so far as you're moonlighting as an adult entertainer, and then during the day doing this like space holding work for people, can feel so contradictory and confronting to people. And in terms of healing the divide, I was sharing with you a moment ago, it's like you heal all the perceptions of divides, you know, just within your own, you know, ecosystem of self. And I'm curious to hear, I can imagine, I know you shared that like this has been something that is like always been kind of part of you. But given that it hasn't always been part of societal norms that you were birthed into, how has your experience been bringing together these two parts of you that feel so fundamentally true in a world that doesn't always want to hold them in togetherness?
Oh, yeah. Well said. And the pearl grasping is real. Like, and honestly, it's in both spaces. You know, I go into the club and people are like, you're spiritual. You're a vegan. You don't drink. And I'm like, I know, I don't really fit in here. And I go into the yoga studios and just, even though it feels scary sometimes, openly say like, yeah, I work as a dancer also. And you get like the crazy eyes and they're like, is this okay? Can we talk about this? And you know, it's taken me, I'm 35, I'll be 35 next week. It's taken me this long to really live in such an integrated way in public. Mm-hmm. But before now, I have kind of been always doing it in secret, which is where we've kept all of this. It's where we've kept sexuality. It's like in secret. Mm-hmm. And it's where we've kept even some deep spirituality, because wearing that on your sleeve out in the matrix isn't always that cool either.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been a game for me, and I've approached it just like I approach everything else in my life. I create a character. I start becoming the character, and then eventually it's like the holograms line up and I realize, oh, I'm one now. Everyone sees it too.
So does it feel authentic?
Yeah, it feels more authentic. I think every expression and iteration of me feels more authentic than it did before.
That's how it feels knowing you for many years and watching this evolution. And so for our listeners who might already feel that sense of, wait, what's happening here? Again, I invite you to into the practice of what's called the willing suspension of disbelief. It's where we lay our narratives down, our preconditions, our presumptions, our projections onto roles, onto ideas. And most importantly, onto each other. And, you know, I would say, like, if your spirituality holds the idea that we are fundamentally one energy, in other words, I see you as me, if you are in favor of sort of stripping away ideas of hierarchy and beginning to see that we're a human family, it's interesting to note inside of our own selves where we cast judgment, where we are unwilling to extend our sameness. Doesn't mean that we do it the same, but that there's a root that is there. And to know how present and aware you are as a being, and to come out of the secrecy and live this, I'm so inspired by you constantly, not just for the doing it, but the way, like you're, like you said, the irreverence and the play and the humanness. It's always, there's a frequency of relatability and enchantment. And I'm excited for everybody to get to feel into this experience with you. And my hope is, It's not that everybody's going to do what I do or what you do, but when we each do our own self so fully, that inspires other people not to do that, our version, but to do themselves so fully. So what is the most unadulterated, fully self-expressed, bold and uninhibited version of you look like when you are fully alive in your unique version? And that's the invitation of this conversation, for me at least. So this said, did you want to speak to that at all?
It just reminded me of the exercise we did in, I believe it was yoga teacher training, where with Arian, we created this map of who we are when we are our fullest authentic selves. Mm. And I remember drawing this stoked on life creature that's wild and playful and, you know, doesn't give a fuck. And is that person who's holding open the door to say like, hey, this is where the weird people are safe. Like, please bring all of you, because I'm bringing all of me and it's weird if you don't.
Absolutely amazing. I love the invitation and the leadership inside of that. Like, I'm not just doing it, but I'm holding the door open for all of us. And I think that speaks to your seat as space holder and that archetype. I want to dive a little bit into this idea of like both places felt like, can I belong here? And kind of curious about like what you've seen as maybe a through line in the consciousness of the collective, respectively, in each of those spaces. Could you unpack that a little bit more, like from your seat? What do you see as the obstacle to integration that lives in those spaces respectively? Because I'd imagine, I don't know, is that different? Does it ultimately distill down to the same?
Yeah, I think you kind of like touched it earlier when you said that it's all kind of what's coming from inside of us. So a lot of the difficulties and the judgment and the criticism that I faced in both the spiritual setting and the sex worker setting have been my own dissonance. Like, it's me. It's coming from inside. The call is coming from inside the house. And I recognize that I am part of the collective and I drank the Kool-Aid that we all drank. And if I'm going to actually be showing up in my full, whole self, that it's up to me to clear that. And then I can actually share it from this pure perspective of, yeah, I'm all of this. Like, and whatever you're projecting on me is not necessarily true, but it doesn't hurt me.
How did you come to that? I speaking from someone who has
a lot of tapping. Cool. That's when I use my EFT and really I brought that into my practice and just the love of some really wise friends who I'm thinking of one specifically, Faith Lowe, who is a sex and relationship coach. And she just always reminded me to hold up the mirror. I had this experience. I went and got a Reiki training and I was so excited. We paid all this money, stayed the weekend. My partner and I went together and just right out the gate, I was being hit with all of this judgment for what I was choosing to do for work. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so triggered. Like, I don't even know if I can receive this attunement because it feels tainted. And now like, I feel tainted. And my friend Faith was like, well, Em, like, just look in the mirror and see what part of you is still feeling at odds and at war with myself. And, you know, with everything going on in the world right now, we need less war. And it starts inside. So being able to accept myself for what I like, for what's fun, for what brings me joy, for how the money is coming to me. And also knowing that this is a moment and I don't need to judge myself for it. Mm. You know, there's like this stigma around dancers, especially, that it's like, this is what you do when you're out of options. You know, like, you hear people joke about it, like, and no offense, but like people in a higher class, people who have money, they're like, well, you know, I could always sell feet pics, or if I get really desperate, you know, I could always strip. And it's like, y'all, it's not that easy. And if you're going to bring your whole self to this, and if you're going to really see all of these people in this industry for the healers that they are, you got to like cut that stigma out, because it's not what you do when you're desperate. If you're doing anything when you're desperate, you're not attracting abundance.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what it is. It's the state of frequency from which you're doing it.
And yeah.
So has this extrapolated itself out to the way you see culture in general right now, like in terms of the broader social zeitgeist that we're in of, you know, whether that's like just the relationships that exist in terms of societally and cancel culture and censorship and it seems to be like everybody wants to put everybody into a box, and then if you're not in my box, because I put my identity in my box, then I'm going to cancel your box. And yeah. How do we make spaces for all of our respective boxes to get along, to work together? Because if we can't do that inside of ourselves, I would imagine we're not going to be able to hold space for that to happen culturally. And right now it still seems like we're in those swings of which one is going to be the dominant version. And that doesn't feel sustainable or healthy to me. So I'm wondering if from your experience of being on the receiving end of that judgment and stigma, moving through the deeper work of reconciliation within yourself, choosing relationships, and at least seeming to be finding a sense of inner authority within it, if there's something you might offer back up to the collective as maybe a compass for where we go from here.
Oh, yeah. So many thoughts.
Yeah, bring it.
Yeah, I mean, one of my big things, and this was from the beginning, I remember when we did our yoga teacher training interview, I was like, I've just done all of this feminine integration and I want to make sure that this training supports it. And I'm coming full circle now, because I'm really seeing and feeling that what we need in our culture and our world is a reintegration of the feminine and masculine. We need the yin and the yang, and it starts within each of us. Like, this is the lover's tarot card. Everyone's like, oh, I'm going to get married and I'm going to find someone who completes me. And it doesn't work like that when we search for it outside of ourselves. And so many of the clients that me and my fellow workers are seeing are looking to plug into divine feminine. They're looking to like get juiced up by feminine. And I find myself, I'm performing feminine, but from a masculine place. Mm. So as I'm coming like into this full integration, that's what I really want for everyone, is to be able to mother and father ourselves. And then you can show up in your relationships really fully and wholly. And you know, you can still participate in the systems, but there isn't this like neediness and grasping.
What are the attributes of when you speak of femininity and masculinity, or divine feminine or sacred feminine, sacred masculine, et cetera, for folks that might not be as familiar with these terms or might just hold it in a loaded sense? I would love to hear your take on that.
Yeah. Well, one of the cool things I like to do, and I have this amazing friend, Kellyanne at V for Vibrant, who has reframed this outside of a gender context. Mm-hmm. Because like, you know, we all fall somewhere on the gender scale, and it's an old dualistic construct. But she says order and chaos, the masculine being order or yang, and the feminine being yin or chaos. And when we're kind of like pulling back and looking at ourselves as cosmic energies, we want to look at what we're bringing. And there's a light and there's a shadow to all of these. So we can sort of separate it out into four boxes. It, like if you're looking at the D&D spectrum of characters and villains, we're seeing exactly. You know, there's like chaotic neutral, chaotic good, but we're looking at chaos light and chaos shadow. And this is the feminine light and the feminine shadow. And the feminine has been in the shadows for so long. It's been devalued. It has been trampled on. It's been like tricked into giving its power away. And so the toxic comes through and women have kind of learned to like manipulate. And there's like a poisoning kind of aspect. When in reality, the light of chaos is desire. It's the feminine saying, oh, I dream of this thing, and coming fully with all of their passion. And that kind of inspires masculine to take action. And that can happen within us, you know? And so like on the other side, we have the divine order, and the shadow of that is taking control, taking too much control, wanting to take power. And it's that hungry ghost energy of just like, there's never enough. You know, there's no end and you'll never feel full. And our light masculine, our light order is asking for action. It's asking for inspired action and like the doing that's necessary in our little bodies on the earth.
It also feels to me as I work on integrating these energies into their light expressions, to borrow the framing that you're speaking to, that the masculine in its order provides structure for the freedom of the chaos to move in a way that doesn't feel threatening to it.
Yeah. And
does that hold in synthesis with what you're sharing?
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, even looking at it as water and fire or water and earth, like providing a container, that the masculine, I got this, I got you energy. That's like, when we talk about attracting a king, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. That's interesting. Cause I've been seeing different posts when people say some of the terminology and I'm like, oh man, I'm dated now. I don't even know what some of the trendy words mean anymore. But what I feel in my own, within my own self and within my relationships is when I am connected to ground, or what I think of as like Shiva, like consciousness, like the idea of big movement energy, that big wave water energy, it doesn't feel so threatening. It feels like a container that can hold this, that it very much is that sense of, I've got this, I've got me, I've got you, I've got us, not for you, because I'm not trying to take control. I'm not trying to deprive you of anything, but with you. And I don't need to shut anything down and I don't need to act it all out. There's a space of being able to kind of hold the immovable, unshakable, birthless, deathless, eternal nature of self while coming into the fullest embodied expression of Shakti, of energy expressing. So it's interesting that in systems like Tantra, which is really the core of these Hatha Yoga disciplines philosophically, that this is what sits at the very root of them. And just coming into it with new terminologies, right? But so I start to think about this. So cool. We're in a similar philosophical framework and frequency. I can sense and feel that, and kind of already known that. And we've spent time in trainings and satsangs together over the years. And so when I start to look at society, not just like how do I live in society, but like kind of like how does society live in society? That the idea of, let's take one for example, like. You said like the duality of gender identity. So at a physical level, right, we have like the X chromosomes and the Y chromosomes, and we're born with certain bodily, you know, whatever the word is, I can't think of for whatever reason, but bodily attributes. That one just felt like Pac-Man chomped out, like the, you know, he's like chomping the little bits, like it chomped my brain cell there for a moment. So there's this certain sense of there's men and there's women. Yeah, exactly. The power pellet. So then when we start to expand, you know, as we are just really in these last few years of coming into like, well, is gender something more than man, woman, and all, and then even beyond gender, sexual orientation. And I'm probably going to even say, even as I'm learning the ways to speak respectfully to people, I'm going to stumble and fumble all over this podcast. And so thank you in advance for any grace. And, you know, I know as a human being, my nature is, I don't ever want to anybody to feel like they don't belong. I don't want anyone to not feel that they can't come into their unique full self-expression as a being. And if that means you're non-binary or binary, if that means you're queer or gay, lesbian, bi, whatever the identifier is that works for you, okay, awesome. But now, how do we bring that into form in a way in society? So we get into these sticky spaces like, oh, well, so does the, you know, can the trans person compete in their non-biological gender sport? Like, well, hold on. Like, how do I, you know, hold to like the ideals of, let's say, feminism, if you even agree with that, we can even, you know, I want to like dive into the details of all these things, but it's like, oh, well, wait a second. Well, my daughter worked her whole life for this, and now a biological male is taking the trophy, et cetera. How do you reconcile and how do you speak to, I guess, this where it gets sticky? If we weren't to just gloss over it at the level of ideal and look at it at the level of implementation, and how do we integrate these things? Not that I don't expect you to have every answer to every question, but like, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's so big. And like, as it goes for the sporting and competition things, like, it's not my realm that I can't speak to, but I can speak to looking at people's integration, right? And when we're talking to someone who is trans, when we're talking to someone who's queer, gender queer, or like orientation queer, we're looking at someone who's done a lot of integration, like on a level that most of us are like, wow, that took a ton of courage. That took a ton of knowing. And it took a ton of self-trust. Like, I mean, I'm just deep bows to everyone who's walked that journey and is walking that journey. And it feels a lot like some of the conversations we've had in the past around how do we include more people and friends of color into the yoga space, especially in like that area of South Florida. And it's more than invitation. It's celebration, recognition, and true integration and welcoming of that person, especially knowing that they may be the only person in the room who looks that way, feels that way, holds these ideals, and realizing how much we can learn from that. And instead of like adding more stigma, and I think I find sometimes we'll end up asking prying questions when we're really just trying to like understand, just welcoming someone soul to soul and learning, taking the seat at their feet and saying, okay, what you got for me?
Yeah. My mantra has been, I am here and I am listening.
Yeah.
It just because it's like the ultimate starting place, you know, to just and maybe it's the ultimate finishing place too, but it's so medicinal to, again, drop the narratives and tell me about the experience that you're having. And even you and I, sitting here, we're born into, a completely different experience of self. We're drawn towards different things, but we're also drawn towards similar things. Like it's so fascinating to me to go, wow, I hold this differently than you. And like, that's okay. That's fine too. And how do we make space for plurality and diversity? But when I guess where I'm going with it is when there's something fundamentally, is the way that I'm going to lead with the way that I'm currently in comprehension. So open to intellectual humility, but there is I'm pausing because I want to use my words carefully, but it seems to be there's one current, I'll call it, that feels like a genuine rising of inclusivity, of people that have long been holding these things, not only in like the shadows of society, but in the shadows of themselves. And how do we make space for everybody to coexist harmoniously as an ideal? So that's one current. It feels genuine. And that could be gender, that could be race, that could be relationship structure, that could be occupation choice. It could be political orientation. I mean, we could go right down the line. And a separate current that calls itself that, claims to ally that, claims to advocate that, and then gets put into like this policy form. And typically, so like I see it in like DEI initiatives, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. But behind it all is like Vanguard, State Street, and BlackRock. Yeah, and it seems like it not only the financial implications of that, but the power, the idea of that shadow masculine, to use again the framework, when the shadow masculine is masking as the light feminine and saying, you have to put these policies in, and then our political party represents you. So we generate and feed and perpetuate the victim narrative, which actually keeps you stuck in the shadow of the feminine, ironically, in the name of bringing you out of it, so that it can maintain that power over dynamic. And that feels, for one, obvious and evident to me, but it doesn't to largely across society. People are like, it feels like to me, and again, I'm in my subjective bias here, but it feels like they're falling for the trap. And then it doesn't work because it's not authentic. And then it reinforces this idea of I'm being suppressed, I'm a victim, and now I'm going to put my identity there. And like you're saying, go ahead and try to create from that space. And now you think you're fighting for something, but you're really being manipulated. How do we counteract that tendency? A is like, do you agree? Do you have a similar calculus of the situation? And B, like, how do we strip it from that really co-opting of that movement in terms of, well, that just can become another voting block, then, check the box for the party that represents you. You know, it reminds me of when Biden was like, you ain't black if you don't vote for Biden. And I'm like, are you serious, dude? Like, get out, man. Like, come on. Like, that right there speaks so much. If I didn't have a practice of not letting other people's self-expression like trigger dictate my own, I would be so activated by that sentence. But it's like, let me put you into a box, call you a minority, and then pretend like I'm giving you the power, and then watch people advocate. And so that's kind of one of the things I want to get into with you.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. And Yeah, 100%. I think the most awkward and fantastic thing we can do is name it. And just every time you see something, say something. And that's like, you know, that ends up being me heckling every commercial I see, or, you know, every advertisement that I go by, I'm like, ooh, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And really like naming those, I mean, sometimes they're microaggressions, sometimes they're masked manipulations. Name them in conversation all the time. Name the victim mentality when you see it. Correct yourself. Like, it's just about being present with all that is. And yeah, we're gonna get swept up from time to time. That's like part of being human, and we can completely love, accept, and forgive ourselves. Mm-hmm. But like, we can make a practice of playfully calling out all of that shit when we see it. And I understand, like, I love what you said about, I'm committed to not showing up from my triggers, but like on some level,
ugh. Yeah, it's not okay. It's not okay. It's gross in a way. And it's hard. That is a, if there's a minority, it's like that. It's like, it feels as if like the minority that's seeing that, it's hard to speak to, because the people that are activated by it, that are buying into it, will perceive you as the manipulator and not wanting to support that movement. And it's like, no, I want to support the genuine expression, the authentic emergence of a more collectively diverse society, but not one that's imposed by the political class or the corporations. That you can feel the inauthenticity just like oozing out of it. And so it feels like I love your answer. It feels like naming it, saying it, beginning to poke that, you know, that balloon, like pop that, because that's not it. And that's not the real thing. And you see it everywhere with like, and yoga actually is, we're both yoga students and teachers, is we've seen it there too, right? Like, you know, it gets, you know, well, we're talking about yoga now, that's great. But it's like, wait a second, like, where's the heart of what it really stands for? And it's like, it's getting strip mined of its real value.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes a well-placed question to someone who's able to receive it is all we can do. Like, just plant a seed and bow, and that's all they're ready for, but maybe that seed will take root.
So then how do you hold, get taking in a little bit of lyric where you are, what's your stance on like the ideas of like wokeism or woke ideology and all that? Like, what's your take?
Man, I think everyone's out here doing their best, and we're not always doing our best in the most aligned and authentic way. Sometimes it is performative. But I'm not mad about there being a woke culture. Let it be the gateway. It's just like, I started yoga for fitness and alignment reasons, but look what it did to me over time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm so grateful for this contribution again. I had a conversation where I was in my reactivity and going like, this is, oh, where we've pendulumed, you know, way too far off. And the person I was in conversation with, I thought was going to kind of like argue it back, like, no, this is what is needed to happen. And she goes like, you're, I totally see that. Like, I agree with that assessment. It's gone way too far off, and it is exactly what needs to happen. And she's like, what I'm seeing in you is just you're seeing, like where it ultimately, where you want the end point to be, but your impatience is denying it the process that it needs to have, because it has to swing out in order to swing back to center. And it doesn't just flow that way because we get it, because we're people and consciousness and moving at the speed of gravity and society. Like, and so we're just penduluming out as a society. So the part that was like stuck in, this is the way that it has to be and it's always been, is holding so tight and trying to fight against, while another part is like in this revolutionary element and swinging out far enough to overcome that. And then ultimately, maybe it's 5, 10, 15, 50 years, who knows? And not like we'll all ever be there at the same time anyway, but maybe the center of gravity for society does ultimately land. And we're just moving through that penduluming process right now.
Oh, yeah.
So how do we hold space?
Right. If it's some kind of spiral, we're like, we've been here before. Damn it, we've been here before, but we're still spiraling up.
No, right? This is the way healing happens. We're orbiting around the same wound from higher consciousness like a winding staircase.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really is like an inside job, and, you know, not as a bypass, like truly to be on that staircase and say, oh, I'm here again. Okay. How can I approach this now with everything that I've taken with me, everything I've learned, all of the love and this vibration that I've now cultivated? It's like stabilization higher and higher and higher. How do I approach this same situation again with my new mind?
Beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, if we were in, you know, put in the seat of coach or space holder, and you were supporting somebody's individual journey, if they were in a space of association, if they were in a space of dissociation and penduluming out, or if they were landing back in integration, you would be able to meet them ideally in an idealized representation. You would be able to meet them at each, whatever level they were at, and support them in moving to the next one. Like, we can't go from association to integration until we push up against those rough borders that say, okay, that's what too far is. I don't know what the sweet middle space is without feeling what too far feels like. And I think the challenge is, if we're in a moment of collective too farness, and that's a long process to move through, well, our lifespans might be short relative to it. So my daughter's only a teenager for these next few years. And so does that mean that as society is flinging out to an imbalanced expression, how do I support her in being part of that? Like, it's so present on social media. It's so present in friend groups. It's so present in school. It's really entrenched into an expression that can feel misaligned. And I think really when I can hear myself respond and to a similar way of what you said, which is to name it, to help her see, well, this is what that is. This is what's happening. You can choose for yourself where you want to align, identify what you want to speak to, what you want, who you want to relate with, and how you want to show up in relationship to what's here. We don't have to just become victims to it swinging out or hold on so tight against it. We can find our authentic truth amidst any swing of society.
No. Oh, yeah. And that's the word for me, like, or the phrase authentic truth. And, you know, it's like, as a collective, we're in this weird narcissistic abusive relationship where we're being gaslit all the time. And if you can't find your ground in that, woo, it's going to be a rough ride. It's going to be a rough ride no matter what, but you can enjoy it also. And I found it happening to me, like allowing any kind of stigma, right, to be kind of thrown on me. And it's as if someone just threw me a bundle and I'm like holding it because I could catch, but what's this?
Yeah, not mine. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not my problem. Here you go. Have it back. And good luck with it. I'm here if you want support. But there's like, yeah, there there's all of these burdens that we're being given and then being told, no, we didn't tell you that you had to carry that for everyone. And yet it is happening. So being able to recognize what that stuff is and putting it back, giving it to the earth, letting it move through is how we're able to like show up in our authentic truth without getting duped constantly by what's going on around us. Like pretty soon we're going to have the robots doing the news and stuff. And like, that's going to get really weird. And we're going to have to really be clear about what we see as truth and what we're experiencing and trust what we're experiencing without jumping out of our bodies when it gets intense.
It's really a beautiful process, what you just described. I want to be present with that because in the disavowing of it, you didn't push it back and say, that's not mine, that's yours. Like, get off me, bro. It was, yeah, you said I'm going to like set it down into the earth. And in that, you know, I learned from one of my first teachers, I as I would feel different forms of difficulty, my emotional experience leave me, I would feel guilty because I didn't want to be putting that energy into the cosmos, you know. And my teacher said, you're underestimating the transmutative power of compassion that is the universe. And it can take it and it can turn it into love. And that was really beautiful. You in a way were like midwifed that energy into its like alchemical transmutation and giving it back down to the earth that way. That was really beautiful. And so, yeah, these are the sticky spaces. Thanks for jumping into them with me. I would love to shift into another one, being polyamory and the idea of, and I love first off just breaking down the word poly, meaning like many, like more than one, and amor, like love, like just to be in it. It's interesting. So the conventional norm that we inherit is one to one. I don't even know. I mean, is monogamy even like the opposite of polyamory? I don't even feel like it is in a way, because it's like that doesn't feel necessarily antithetical. But I'd love to hear your thoughts, somebody that's really lived in this space. And if you could describe, yeah, maybe starting with the definition and understanding of how you hold this nature of relationship for people to, again, receive without the filters of their preconceived notions.
Yes. Yeah. So I think like the words are kind of, there's compulsory monogamy, just like we have compulsory straightness. It's just like, this is what people do. And then polyamory for me means many loves. Hmm. Like real simple. And, you know, we see the word pop up everywhere, polytheism, polyhedron, and we know what it means, but having it in the context of romantic relationship and or sexual relationship is like all covered in stigma when we first look at it. And yeah, it got clear to me when I realized that I have friends that I love, and I have parents that I love, and I have past partners that I still love, and I have friends I don't speak to anymore that I still love. And I was like, oh my God, I am polyamorous. Because if we're really looking at like monogamy, this is like penguins. They just mate for life, but they're also part of a community. So maybe they are kind of polyamorous too. Yeah. And when I think about, you know, like parents, y'all don't say like, well, I only have enough love for this one kid. So the rest I'll just have to leave out in the cold. But, you know, opening up to being loved from multiple angles is huge, because it's almost like standing in one of those trifold mirrors, or like four mirrors, or however many mirrors you choose, reflecting you back to you from every angle. And you best know you're probably going to see some unintegrated parts that are difficult to look at first.
I mean, the level of, it's funny because people are like, oh, open relationship. And I'm like, I don't think that's accurate right there. That feels like the level of work. I'm in a one-to-one relationship with somebody, and that brings up so much the increasingly exponentially complexifying dynamics. I'm shut down over here because how this person is reacting, but I'm open here. I'm healing from heartbreak because we broke up, but we're still together. Like, whoa, like, the implications are profound. And, you know, is everybody in a relationship with everybody? And like, can that, how does that function? And, you know, I'd love to just understand more if you could unpack another layer or two.
Totally. Yeah. So I think recognizing too that we have all these different kinds of love for different people is really important. Like, I started to get clear that, like, I have romantic love with some of my friends. Like, we like to get together and be little romance fiends, but it's not sexual. And it might not mean that we ever live together. It doesn't mean we share a bank account. And then recognizing with someone else, like, this is a deeply sexual connection, but I'm not getting the emotional support or needs met. So can we negotiate this being just that? Or, you know, how does it work?
Communication has to be so on point.
Yeah, it does. And like, in so many ways, I have epically failed. And of course, like, I'm in my inner world is what I'm going to see in my outer world. So my first go round with polyamory, it felt very disastrous to me, but also just was a huge growth portal because I saw all the holes in the little bypasses where I wasn't actually ready to communicate with that kind of depth with multiple people everywhere all at once. And right.
Yeah. If you're just listening to the podcast, my head is nodding like, whoa.
Yeah. And you saw me during that time. I was like vibing, but I was also hanging on for dear life. And while, you know, my first experience of polycule and like this container of four people coming together with the intention to all love each other, mixing sexual love, mixing romantic love, mixing friendship, mixing brotherhood, like mixing sisterhood, mixing spirit. You know, it didn't end up that, you know, all four of us lived happily ever after, but I got some of the most powerful and like the quickest healing for my original wounds that I've ever experienced. You know, it pushed me, said, okay, you're struggling because there's some stuff that you need to clean up. And I was fortunate to be around people who let me do that work for myself. And when I talk to people who are interested in getting into polyamory or opening a relationship, that's what I really stress is like, this is about getting fully integrated in yourself first, because this journey will bring everything up from multiple angles. And if you don't feel clear in your spirit and you don't feel grounded, like it could become a traumatic situation. Not that it will, but.
So how do we negotiate the idea that like the relationship itself is the healing ground versus I need to be healed before coming into the relationship? Like, do we really get integrated first, or do we open to the recognition that it is time and this is the space and the people for me to embark upon the journey of my integration, knowing the terrain's going to get maybe extra bumpy here. I mean, my deepest wounds in a relationship are being cheated on, so to speak, right? And so it's like the idea of like seeing my partner with another person pushes on that, the idea of abandonment and not being chosen, like all these things that it seems to be that like maybe the sticking point or one of many, I'm really just like approaching with curiosity, is that there's something tends to happen in the psyche that feels, well, you're like, I don't know that it's possessive, like your mind, but this only exists here. These feelings, these emotions, these, sexuality, like sex, emotional intimacy exist just between us, and what I thought was just between you and I can be shared somehow devalues what I thought was just here. And maybe it's how we outsource to like mattering, like saying, this is my worth comes from this, my mattering comes from this, my security comes from this, my wholeness, my validation. So to the degree that I've outsourced it and now it can be shared, then it threatens all those spaces. So the amount of emotional maturity, the amount of emotional bravery that has to live, if you're sincerely trying to live in this way, and it's not just like this, the way people present it as like, it's just a free for all, whatever. And it's like, no, if somebody's genuinely committing to this work, it seems like it's the exact opposite of that. And what it would push on feels so threatening that it doesn't surprise me that people would want to call it something that it's not and then not look at it, because it confronts everything that we guard. And so I would love to hear, to whatever degree of vulnerability you're comfortable speaking to that, what your experience has been like.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like it pushed on my original wound of abandonment as an adoptee. And like, not only did I find myself, I mean, it was so trippy, I cannot even tell you. I found myself set up in this space, almost like a play, where there were characters, each playing a parent in some weird metaphysical way. And it always ended with my story that I have been repeating my whole life of being abandoned. And then of being received by people who were not able to attune to me. And so I was like in this soup of it, and trying with my adult language skills and communication and my compassion and my own self-preservation to communicate what my needs were. And like what I ended up learning was that I was in a space where my needs couldn't get met. And I got some therapy and was practicing my tapping and tapping on abandonment trauma. Mm-hmm. And with some of my partners as well, they were involved in this process with me and witnessing me. And it ended up that like, that wasn't the space for me, but it was the space that I needed. And because we entered in with this like love contract, it was like, okay, even though this dissolves, there's still love. And whoop, painful, scary, wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it kind of speaks to where we were before too, that I think we have these presuppositions that if someone can't meet my needs, they don't love me. Or if someone's in conflict with me, they don't love me anymore. Like all of these ways that we've created stories that just cut us off from connection over and over and over. But this is like, okay, how can I have bridges, and where can the bridges go? How can we build them? Maybe I only built half a bridge and you didn't build your half, and that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. That's wild. I mean, it's not even like a trap door. It's like a trap floor is what it can feel like. It's like the floor pulls out and it's like my ground of being, it can feel lost. And I can only imagine that in the context of being adopted. Are you comfortable speaking about adoption and that journey?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you share a little bit about like how old you were? Do you remember your birth parents? Like how was that journey?
So it didn't start off unique, but it's ended up unique. I was adopted as a baby through a Christian adoption agency. So my parents were vetted to be a God-fearing Christian couple. And thanks, guys. And at that point, my biological mom was planning to become a youth pastor, and she was 17. So my biological father was down in Miami, oddly enough, and he was in school. He just thought, I can't take care of a child, and they put me up for adoption. And I was received by my parents like a couple weeks after being born. And I want to mention too, like private adoptions are transactional. So like that's there. And that is a very weird thing to contend with.
What do you mean by that?
Like knowing that in some ways I was bought and sold. Like my body was sold. Which is wild. And like, I grew up knowing the whole story the whole time. From when I was little, I'd be like, I'm adopted. I'm more special than you. I actually got punished for it one time as a young child. And I had the story that like, I was saved, you know, that someone loved me so much that they wanted a better family for me who could really take care of me, and that this family really wanted me. Like it was all about being wanted, really, was the story. And it's beautiful and true. And it washes over the experienced somatic moment of losing everything for me as a pre-verbal little baby creature, where I went from the voices and the touch and the smells and the people that I knew and was taken away from all of that, put with a foster family for a week or two, and then transferred to a new family. Yeah.
Stored in your nervous system. That is not just a story that we can adapt to.
Right. It like, I didn't have words for it. I didn't have any language to communicate. Like, I feel like you guys are gaslighting me and I shouldn't feel angry about being adopted, but I do. I feel really pissed. And like that surfaced as a teenager. And I remember my parents got me a punching bag. They were like, we don't know what to do with you, kid. And I was dancing. Thank goddess that I was always dancing, and use that as an outlet just for my grief and my rage and to connect with feminine. And when I was 17, I met my bio mom. Yeah. And she's this very cool babe who is, you know, she was the most like me person I had ever met for the first time.
At your age now.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I opened the door and she was there and we just like stared at each other for a full minute. Like, you look like me. You look like me.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, come to find out, she had left the church. She expatriated to Canada, and I have a sister. And like that journey of getting to know her was incredible. And just, you know, seeing what it's like to biologically be like someone gave me a sense of connection that I just hadn't known before. Mm. And 7 years down the road, I found my bio father. And here comes the other half of my DNA. And all of my little tendencies. And, you know, I saw like my need to move and travel and explore. And I saw my vibrance in him and like his playfulness and his irreverence. I was like, wow, I've been keeping that part of me in the shadows. Cause I just, everyone always looked at me and said, where did that come from? Yeah. And now I have all four parents in my life, granted, not all together at the same time, but yeah, not yet. One day. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. It's really like this prismatic way of looking at not just like my DNA and my conditioning and my nurture versus nature, but like my karmic connections. Right. Like I'm tied by four threads.
Everyone. It's
wild. So polyamory is like a no brainer.
Right. It's almost more natural. It's like,
yeah.
That's a fascinating story. Thank you for detouring into that space with me. Mm-hmm. An incredible journey. It feels like a natural segue into how you support what gets pushed on inside of the context of intimacy, that these core wounds of not being chosen are so susceptible to being pressed upon even more so in the nature of not only the relationship, but then because of your work that then that could push on those things for other people. And you were like, let's like really shake this thing up in every potential way. And it's like, oh, is there a fire? Let me run towards it. And it's like in a way that's like, yes, because I know that the fire is the space of transformation. And it feels like there's some guiding wisdom in you that says there's work here. Let me move towards it. It's like you took the fast pass for transformation at the reincarnation line. And and so you're like, let's go this route. And life can look so many different ways. And somehow while you're humaning and figuring it all out as is authentic to you, you are stumbling upon the need for practices that don't bypass the circuitry that has experienced these things. And so finding dance, finding yoga, the somatic disciplines, and then ultimately into this practice that seems like it has really been helpful for you of EFT. So can you define what that means and define what that is, what it looks like, and how people like might find benefit from it if they're moving through certain, whether it's patterns or conditions or just experiences in their life, who might it be beneficial for?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So EFT is emotional freedom technique. Sometimes you'll see TFT or just tapping. And it basically uses the meridians that we know are already in our body that science now acknowledges. And the Chinese medicine.
Chinese meridian. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic wisdom has known for a much longer time. And we're, instead of using needles, just tapping our fingers on them. And there are certain meridians that activate certain things. And as you're going through the points, you're down-regulating your nervous system. And the trick with EFT is that we're talking about our trigger as we do it. So we're walking into the fire and saying, I feel unwanted. And here's why, here's the story, here's all the dirt, and you lay it all out on the table, and then you tap through your points and recode your brain and recode your nervous system that so that the next time you encounter this problem out here in the real world or this trigger, you're like, I've worked through this. I've done it as a somatic practice. I've used my mind and my body, and now my spirit's in alignment. And it just doesn't It doesn't shake me the same way that it used to.
So it's a complete nervous system recalibration experience. And it feels very holistic in the sense that you're working, you know, for the yogis listening at all the, on all the koshas, you know, you're really hitting all the layers of self by, you know, adding your body and working with the energy field and naming the emotion, witnessing it enough in order to speak to it, which is implicit within that process. So that's really, really profound. It's funny, as a yoga teacher for years, I would, and you know, practicing with me, like I have people drum and shake and tap their bodies, and we do like full body tapping, but I never learned it within this context. It was just very organic for me. Like, let's just drum and tap our bodies. And so I'm thinking about it also in context to yin, which is meridian based, and how cool would that be to be tapping the meridians. The posture is directed towards really supporting the migration of prana and to nourish those organ channels. And so could you describe a process? Could you take us through sort of maybe like a mini version, or even like I'm happy to jump in, or it could be like an explanation too, whatever your guidance yields.
Yeah, let's do it. I feel like because we've been on it, we want to tap on being unwanted, feeling unwanted.
Mm-hmm. Got right, it. Cool. Yeah, for sure.
So here's how it starts. We're going to just feel into, get in the body, take a couple of breaths, and feel unwanted. And just allow a couple of moments of being unwanted, moments where that story came to you to kind of flash through.
Can I pause briefly just to say, if you're listening right now, this could be a spot to maybe pause if we're jumping into something that feels like a process and you wanted to join it. It might not be, just check in with yourself. Is this the right time? If not, you can also fast forward and catch us in a few minutes on the other side of it, but want to just honor the consent to come into practice. But if you feel called, this is something you can come back to. But for my own sense, I'm ready to join you in that for sure.
Cool. Yes. Thank you so much. Yeah. And one of the benefits too of using EFT is that it can't hurt you. There aren't side effects. And also, if you do need more support for something so deep as what we're like casually going to tap on, that is totally normal and makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. You ready for a tune in?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I'm game. I'm curious.
Cool. So we're bringing up unwanted and allowing it to manifest in a couple of moments. Taking a couple of breaths and recognizing where we are, the feet on the ground and the booty in the chair and the head rising towards the sky. We know we're not in those moments right now, but we might still feel kind of emotional aftershock. And if you could rate the emotional aftershock on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the most in your nervous system, just give it a number. You can say it out loud or in your head. And then we're going to start tapping on the side of the hand, your karate chop point, just soft pressure. And I'll have you repeat after me. I feel unwanted.
I feel unwanted.
And I have all of these stories that support my feeling.
And I have all of these stories that support this feeling.
And I recognize that they aren't true.
And I recognize that they aren't true.
But they just feel really real.
But they just feel really real.
I felt unwanted in the past.
I felt unwanted in the past.
And it's felt really bad.
And it's felt really bad.
And I don't want to keep feeling unwanted.
And I don't want to keep feeling unwanted.
So I'm willing to recognize.
So I'm willing to recognize.
All of the unwanting within me.
All of the unwanting within me.
And how all of the times that I felt unwanted out there in the world.
All of the times I felt unwanted out there in the world.
Were never personal.
Were never personal.
And that I survived every single one.
And that I survived every single one.
I didn't think I would.
I didn't think I would.
But I'm here.
And you froze up on me. I don't know if there's another one.
But I'm here.
That's the one. But I am here.
And I recognize that I'm safe.
And I recognize that I'm safe.
Even when I feel unwanted.
Even when I feel unwanted.
And we're going straight up to the top of the head. Even though in the past.
Even though in the past.
I have felt unwanted.
I have felt unwanted.
I might have even had people say.
I might have even had people say.
We don't want you here.
We don't want you here.
And it really hurt. And it really hurt.
And it really hurt.
Even though in the past I've been unwanted.
Even though in the past I've been unwanted.
I still completely love myself.
I still completely love myself.
And I completely forgive myself. And I completely forgive myself.
I forgive myself.
And I forgive anyone else who helped contribute to that feeling.
And I forgive anyone else who helped contribute to that feeling.
All of these feelings of being unwanted.
All of these feelings of being unwanted.
All of these stories I have stacked up on my desk.
All of these stories I have stacked up on my desk.
Where have they even gotten me?
Where have they even gotten me?
It's gotten me a lot more of the same.
It's gotten me a lot more of the same.
So I'm willing to try something new.
So I'm willing to try something new.
And instead of hunting for all the places I feel unwanted.
And instead of hunting for all the places I feel unwanted.
I'm going to start making a list of everywhere I do feel wanted.
I'm going to start making a list of everywhere I do feel wanted.
Starting with myself.
Starting with myself.
I'm going to look in the mirror and say, I love you.
I'm going to look in the mirror and say, I love you.
Can't wait to spend the day with you.
Can't wait to spend the day with you.
Because I know that in the end.
Because I know that in the end.
I'm the one who really needs to want me.
I'm the one who really needs to want me.
And all of those spaces and circumstances.
And all of those spaces and circumstances.
Where I felt unwanted.
Where I felt unwanted.
We're just showing me where I don't want to be either.
We're just showing me where I don't want to be either.
And so I completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
And so I completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
And I know that I am totally worthy.
They know that I am totally worthy
of allowing myself to be in containers that feel good for me.
Of allowing myself to be in containers that feel good for me.
And it doesn't mean that I'll never feel unwanted again.
It doesn't mean that I'll never feel unwanted again.
It just means that I'm not going to create a whole story about it.
It just means that I'm not going to create a whole story about it.
And I know that I'm not bad or wrong or stupid.
And I know that I'm not bad or wrong or stupid.
For having experienced these feelings.
For having experienced these feelings.
And written these stories.
And written these stories.
Because I'm a magnificent child of the universe.
Because I am a magnificent child of the universe.
And I'm going to take a breath and then another.
I'm going to take a breath and then another.
And that's proof right there.
And that's proof right there.
That I am wanted by the divine.
That I am wanted by the divine.
Because I am still here.
Because I am still here.
So even though in the past I have let unwanted rule me.
So even though in the past I have let unwanted rule me.
I completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
I completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
And I am ready and willing.
And I am ready and willing.
To step into this new version of me.
To step into this new version of me.
Who always feels safe and loved.
Who always feels safe and loved.
And so it is.
And so it is.
Take a big breath in. Hold it at the top. And when you're ready to let it go, big open mouth, relaxed jaw. And we're just going to tune in one more time. I am unwanted. And rate it 1 to 5. What is it hitting like? 5 is super true. 1 is what? And notice if there's a change there.
Massive change.
Yeah, that's EFT right there.
Wow. Thank you for, you know, Johnny on the spotting that with me. That was awesome. I moved from, interesting. I don't want to say I was in a 5 of in this moment, I'm feeling like that really come up for me. But when I looked at it, the voice in my head, like I went to, well, where is that? The response I internally got was, where isn't it? It's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. I'm afraid of it everywhere. It's the monster lurking under the bed of, you know, and my Enneagram 9-ness, the core messaging is I don't matter. And, you know, nobody special is actually the root of it. And so that idea of like, well, I won't be chosen. I won't matter. I'm not wanted. I've been left. You know, all these things have really, it's been something I've worked with a lot and it journeys with me in these spaces of being seen more. So it's hard just to show up and have a podcast or teach a class or share a post or something, you know. And I wanted to do this for so long, but the idea that my face is going to be on a screen and people can have opinions and make an unwant and then, but feeling like, no, I really, I have something to say. I want to do this. I can feel the impulse to share and show up in a bigger way, but the fear wants to keep me hidden. So getting to do this in this forum, in this format was really cool. I could feel it everywhere. And I love the quest, the prompts that you shared. I mean, that was amazing. If you're listening to the podcast, we were moving through a sequence of tapping different points along the way. I encourage you to hop onto YouTube and look at the visual representation. It's we're an hour and 24 minutes in, and we probably started this maybe 10-ish minutes ago. I don't know, something like that. I didn't look at the start time, but you can, you know, hop over to that minute marker and find your way here if you want to join us for the practice. Now the sequence that we, let me say, I landed at a one, like I was kind of chuckling. I feel so good. I'm like, thank you for the prompts, but knowing that the things I was saying and giving voice to is it's like tapping the emotional body while my hands are tapping what's happening at the meridian level. So really cool. I love meridian work, and I didn't know enough about EFT to realize it was based on meridian theory. So that's really neat. In this past weekend, we're doing a 300-hour teacher training. So we're going deeper into practices and for people who are already teachers. And we did our module on yin, and our group is presenting individually. They're going into pairs tonight to work with sharing yin practice, where there's corresponding dharma teachings for the emotions that connect to the specific organs and meridians. They're choosing mantras, meditations, and pranayama practices to for the specific meridian that they were assigned to build a sequence around. So they're choosing the asanas for that meridian, the breath for that meridian, the meditation for that meridian, the mantra for that meridian, to know that we can tap and bring that in. I'm going to drop that in on them as an option if they're familiar with EFT. Cool. Thank you for sharing that work with me. And I love that it also can demonstrate for people what you do and the gifts that you have, and I hope that that alone destigmatizes some of the notions. It's one thing to ask you how you hold different things; it's another thing to experience them and be like, okay, so you're real deal. I can feel that. There's no hiding, and you can't fake the frequency, and you're, you know, just such an incredibly beautiful soul. I want to thank you for doing that work with me. I feel lighter right now because of it. Yeah. So anything else in the realm of EFT that you feel called to speak to share?
Yeah. I mean, and I'll kind of track back a little and share that I let this cross over into my life as a sex worker, and I have been known to tap with people while sitting at the bar or stand behind them in the mirror and say, I want you to look in the mirror and say that you completely love, accept, and forgive yourself because you're worthy of that, man. Like,
yeah.
It's
been wild. So what do you see as that is, like, what's the core need? If there is there like an archetypal through line
for
customers or clients that would come in?
I mean, I see a lot of things that are kind of rampant, and I offer free tappings for a lot of them because I believe that everyone should have access. And one of them is addiction and just like not understanding or seeing where we're where we have chains just laid loosely upon us. And we can leave it behind, and just a lot of numbing. And I do see, like I said before, people looking to get in touch with the feminine when all along it's within us, but they're looking to like find it. And maybe, you know, modeling and having a mentor, like there's nothing wrong with that. And like, as you know, in some tantric practices, like it works. It can really work if we come in with awareness, but it's really just the not knowing what it is that I'm looking for. And that's kind of what I like to bring to people's attention. Like, you know, give yourself some more love. Most likely, probably across the board, we could all do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And EFT, Mm-hmm. You can use it for everything. They are literally doing research on how you can walk back your prescription for your eyesight using EFT. Memory issues. I love to use Louise Hay's Heal Your Body as a companion text because she has every sickness almost under the sun, what emotional and mental belief it comes from, and then the affirmations to counter it. And if you tap on those affirmations, it has a lot of power to clear up some chronic things. You know, often in conjunction with whatever else you're doing, nutrition and your doctor and your therapist, but mm-hmm. putting it all together, it's super, super magical work. And tapping can be used. The mentor I studied with, Gala Darling, she used it to clear her eating disorder.
What?
And I started with her to clear some of my abundance blocks.
So, yeah, I want to get into that because I've seen that as a theme in some of your shares lately on social media platforms. So, but before we do that, the sequence that we just moved through, does the sequence change based on what you're working with, based on the meridian? Is it, how many points are there? Can you describe them for people that might not be watching, but listening?
Yeah. So the algorithm I just did started on the karate chop point, which is our setup, and that's tapping the side of the hand, like the kind of meaty part of the lateral part of your hand. And then when we go through the points, this is just kind of an overall algorithm. And the ones that we use are the top of the head, it's the crown, and then just above the brows and the center, we have the temples, the top of the cheekbone, the upper lip, the lower lip, where the collarbones meet, under the armpit, kind of on your ribs there, and then the wrist points. And these are like the Gala Darling method. That's her tapping algorithm. But I have books and research that uses specific algorithms to combat specific things. Like, for instance, phobias, you kind of just stick around this area up on your, around your eye. And if you're working with addiction, you might move it down to the heart. And sometimes, because I'm a rogue, I'll go off the map and I'll tap wherever I feel a blockage in my body. Mm.
Got it. And so there are set points, but there's also intuition.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's science that is still being researched and discovered because it's honestly a huge disruption to our current medical industrial complex. Mm. And it was developed to help treat people with PTSD from the military. So, you know, it's...
It works. They're adopting it, but keeping it secret. Well,
yeah.
And what we know to be true.
Yeah. People are suspicious of like energy things and meridian things, and that's fine. But, you know, the science is there to back it up, and we're only getting more and more, which is great.
Yeah, ultimately, it's the results. You know, I was having a conversation with my son yesterday, and it's like people, you know, dog placebos. He's like, if it works, it works. Like the outcome should be the litmus test for it. And, you know, it's so true. And so that it feels like a natural opening of the door actually to, I'm going to pivot where I thought we were going to go. But I wanted to go into tarot because that's something, and maybe we can connect the other piece, which was the financial piece. So like two other things I want to make sure that we tap into, dad joke, before I literally get mocked for this all the time, but, you know, before we go, which is tarot, because it's one of those, all those things also that, people will say, ah, that doesn't work or whatnot, but you utilize this practice and I can see you're like, yo, it's legit. So share with us a little bit about why it works in your understanding, how it works, and how you utilize it in practice.
Yeah, totally. I mean, tarot is a gateway to our subconscious or our unconscious. the part of us that, or shadow, you know, you can say it a million different ways, but it helps you look in the mirror really deeply and look into some of the places that maybe you haven't wanted to look and shine some light there. And the reason that we can do that with tarot is that we have this system set up with archetypes. And there's a reason that across cultures, across world religious pantheons, we have kind of the same archetypes over and over with different names and faces. Mm. And it's because we contain them all. So when we're looking at tarot and we're receiving messages from it, it's an invitation to look at where that archetype is showing up in your life and how it's showing up in its shadow or its light or its divine order or chaos. And like Carl Jung used to use tarot when he would feel stuck with a client and he would read for them. He would also look at astrology. And in fact, the two systems are inherently linked. So it's like, once you kind of start sticking your nose around in all of these esoteric arts, you start to see how just divinely woven together it all is and how all the systems have infantilized and kind of written it all off and or called it witchcraft, right? And kept us out of fear, kept us from it out of fear. When really it's just a system of looking at what's going on inside of us, not necessarily predicting tomorrow.
Really interesting. This past weekend in that same 300 hour container, we were studying with a teacher to learn about Jyotish, which is Vedic astrology. And she had done a chart for me based on my birth time and year. And it's connected to, but different from astrology as we know it, I guess it's maybe Western astrology. And it was really interesting and might be something to explore further if you're into that. And if so, I can connect you with her. And for anybody else that's interested in that, it's J-Y-O-T-I-S-H, pronounced Jyotish or Jyotish. And that was really fascinating. I guess my question with some of these art forms is, so when you're drawing the cards to read, is it that there is some sort of, do you have a belief that there is like an intelligence to the choosing process, that there's like intuition guiding, like this is the card that's for you? Or is it more so it doesn't matter which one you pick because all the archetypes live in you and it's an invitation to explore your relationship to that archetypal pattern?
I mean, it's both and, but I will say when you start to read consistently, you'll end up with the same messages over and over until you're like, okay, I hear you. I'm trying. I'm working on it. Can you explain it to me a different way? And you can kind of keep going deeper and deeper into what you're working with. But I mean, it's synchronicity, really.
Right. So what is that intelligence in your estimation? So that, because that introduces a whole nother idea here, yeah, which is that the universe itself has an intelligence that pervades it, that is like a field that we can tap into, and that we are maybe not even like we're outside of it and we tap into it, but that it's ever present and we're maybe emergent from it. And it's like the air that we breathe or like the sea that the fish are swimming in, you know, that sense of the readily available synchronistic intelligence of this dimension. And how it similarly, like we've all experienced it. So we want to like with a lot of the content we're talking about today, we want to, you know, do the witch thing with it and, you know, burn it at the stake, hide it, deny it, et cetera. But then it's fascinating because you start to look at those moments in your life that where you've experienced these undeniable synchronicities, and then we self-deny them and go back, and it almost feels to me like we're living in a world where we operate like everything is just normal as dictated by the five senses, and there's so much more than that. And so it feels like the, like what I'm taking in today is there's the movement from being dysregulated to regulated. And so something like EFT supports that movement. But then there's also a movement from regulated to liberated. And it's really that we're alchemizing the dysregulated into the liberated. Like our wounds become our wisdom, our adversity becomes our artistry, and we're transmuting these traumas into something profoundly transformational, but also more than what we thought we were, that it's opening us up to the possibility that there's a lot more going on here than we recognize. And if we limit ourselves to pure rationalism, then we don't have then we misperceive trans-rationalism as pre-rationalism. And in doing so, we miss an opportunity to fully receive who and what we truly are. And even if you're skeptical, awesome, like bring the skepticism with you and let results, you know, so like what you said, well, it's funny, you do this and you start to see, and it's like, okay, go back to the placebo. If the outcome is working, then the outcome is working. And you start to live in this way that orients to mystery as an invitation to an open state of experience versus belief, which sort of concretizes and hardens to a closed energetic experience. And so it's great to come in and like, cool that you have convictions and beliefs and assumptions that you have utilized to feel more safe in the world, but have they made you feel more safe, or have they kept you more bound? You know, have they really opened you to freedom, or have they kept you really closed off and rigid? And I don't say that with judgment, but with the invitation to let uncertainty roam free, let curiosity live in our lives, and maybe don't take it so seriously, and let the playfulness come with you so you can try something maybe you would not do. I took that up as a practice for a while. Like, I'm just going to do things I would otherwise say no to. All right. It was like in dating, it was in recreation. It was like, I'm only going to do the things that I wouldn't otherwise do. Guess what I found in that?
Yoga.
Yoga. Fuck. Right? I was like, okay, that's cool. It's interesting. I wouldn't even chant Om for 2 years. I'm like, yeah, I'm a fucking cult. And then I'm like, Om. I'm like, where's that? And then like, now I'm like, oh. I'm like, well, that is a tuning fork right there. My whole being just recalibrated to that. And, you know, and I can do that anytime and anywhere. And whoa, that's wild. That's wild. You know, it's mantra is a great representation of that. And so all the things we want to closet off and say no to, that's really the theme of this conversation. All the ways we say no, we shun, we close off to, like, according to who? Like, why? Like, if you grew up in, let's say you were born into a world where like paganism was revered, you know, if you don't question anything, then you wouldn't question that, you right. know? Like, so like, if you're like, it really makes me stop and think, like, when everybody's so identified with their values and their belief systems and their cultural norms, like, and they're like, this has to be right, and I stand on this. It's like, well, if you haven't questioned it, we could have put you in the exact opposite system and you would be advocating for that system. So if your system doesn't stand on the capacity to question it, right? Is education valuable if it doesn't educate you in how to question what you're being taught? You know, that's a big thing. And I think if we're going to really step into our potential as individuals and as a collective, we need to be willing to question the conventions that we were conditioned to receive. And isn't that, if, and I would even push back one layer further, Emily, and say, if you want to be conservative, and I don't mean to conserve the current norm, but to conserve the tradition of being, which is evolution, the greatest thing that you could do is challenge the norms, because that's been the most consistent thing that's ever been.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, also overarching, it's questioning with genuine curiosity and really like being open to the answers that you're receiving. Mm-hmm. Because I think sometimes we're asking questions out of like our own preconceived judgment and notions, and that comes through energetically. But when we can really take a moment to get grounded, do our OM or our EFT, whatever it is that does it for us, and ask a question that's lying underneath the trigger you're feeling, which is fear, right? It's just, you know, simple fear in different outfits, then we can learn and we can grow. And it's silly. Like if I had hung on to everything I believed since I was born, I wouldn't have evolved anywhere. What I said last week, I might not even stand behind, because we're in a constant state of growing and learning and evolving. And it's like, you don't need to be attached to that. That's not you. You is so much bigger and vaster in all of us and all around us. And like, that's what we're diving into. It's like right. touching it's the even... untouchable.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's really stepping back and seeing like who I call me is not a self that is moving through time, but rather a self that time is moving through. And there is an intersection yeah. point between
like this much of us is out here as an avatar.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And, but it's cool. That's cool. It's like, we are the Big Bang in a sense. Like we're right at that intersection.
Oh, yeah, that's the tantra. Point it's where, the invitation where
form,
to
we're formless play. And we're form. We're consciousness and we're matter. We're unmanifest and we're manifest. And we're standing perpetually on the precipice of that. But when we mistake our identity into only the produced aspect, and then it gets us in trouble. And similar to the penduluming we were talking about earlier, when we then deny that aspect in service of being something more, we likewise suffer. But when we just expand our awareness, when we widen the aperture to include more of ourselves, we realize that we are fundamentally whole, we are fundamentally worthy, and we are fundamentally secure, and we are connected to everything and everyone. Abundance isn't something we can even transact, because it is something that we are, and we don't have to become what we are. We just remember what is most deeply true. And then that is a beautiful magnet for everything, but it's only drawing in. It can only draw in because it's already connected. It's not like we become free or we become abundant. There's no attainment. There's no non-attainment. There just is. And that's what we are.
It's the reverse graffiti, right?
It's the reverse graffiti. Yeah. Well played. So if we were to drive that into the financial context mm-hmm. and looked at abundance within monetary terms, that's a space that you work in. Is it both personally and professionally as well? Does your coaching support that for people?
So I feel like I am still in the midst of it. And I'm working with someone, Elizabeth Ralph, who's the spiritual investor, who has just been like quantum leaping me with all of the money things. And I think, you know, it's something that I will absolutely speak on, but I'm not quite there as a teacher yet.
Yeah, thank you for the honesty. But yeah, what you feel ready and comfortable in sharing, maybe some of the tools that you've learned or insights that have been super supportive for you.
Yeah. So her like motto in life is show up needing nothing and receiving everything. And this is exactly the mirror of what you're saying about abundance. Like I'm divinely connected. I'm divinely safe. My soul is untouchable as fuck. I am infinite. I am limitless. I'm the only one who sets the limits for myself. So, okay, I I've noticed in my life, I set a limit on how much I was willing to receive when it came to money, but also love and pleasure. Like it's all in there together. And as I started to increase that, you know, there's this natural like expand and contract and expand and contract that happens, the sponda for Arian. And not getting attached to that and staying in a state of neutrality is what's getting me to where I want to go. And I want to say for all of us, maybe especially for artists who are taught that we're supposed to be struggling and starving, or we're selling out, you find yourself trapped in this cycle of chaos where it's like, oh my God, I'm receiving everything. And now I don't feel capable of holding it. And I'm back on the bottom. And so just stepping off that ride and recognizing that every day I wake up and I have everything that I need. And if I don't, I'm worthy of support. I'm worthy of asking for it. Just the practice of asking for it, as you know, is huge. And recognizing that I can receive in ways that my brain couldn't even imagine. Like, I've had some manifestations come through in some of these cash money honey courses I've done with Gala Darling. I'm like, this is nuts. I put my order into the universe. I was specific and I received. This is nuts.
And it's wild. I don't know if this has felt true for you, but for me, that belief was etched like there's some thing about me that will like, that's not for me. Like it's going to be hard for me and it's this big thing. And it's going to be like, if I could finally do it, then I will have like be the man my father imagined I could be, and you know, and I could finally have financial security, and and it's like dun 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 dun, it's like so much samskara there, and realizing I also started working with a coach for like business and this sort of thing, and the first thing I've been coaching and she was like, well, why don't we trade? Like, I really want to work with you. I see a lot of value in what you do that would be helpful for me. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. So I do a session and she's like blown away and like really getting a lot of benefit from it. And then it's my turn and to be on the receiving end of that. And so we get into it and she's like, so what do you charge for coaching? And I was so excited to tell her because I had just increased my rates and I knew where it was going. I knew that I was like undervaluing and she like almost spit out her drink. And I was like, oh my God, I'm charging too much, dude. I can't believe this. And she's like, you're like scales undercharged. Like you're in the wrong mindset. And I was like, oh my God, talking about them, I'm good mindset. And she's like, you gotta like literally like we're talking multiples more than what you're doing. And I was like, that feels so scary. And she's like, just try it on, wear it for a week, just keep saying it. And I was like, oh God, I mean, it was scary. And then I was like, you know what, I'm gonna just try it. And then it was, not only was it like, oh my God, that's awesome. Yeah, thank you. But it was, and now my work in coaching, well, it's not about and never has been about just how can I make so much money from this? That has its own like icky to it. If when you can feel that someone's about that as like, that's the fundamental purpose. I've always been rooted in like the Dharma of it, but I've used that like it was somehow like they're like invalid, they're in contrast. And it's like, no, that like, you know, like the healthy restaurant shouldn't charge less because it's healthy.
Right.
McDonald's shouldn't charge more because it's bad for you. I mean, what kind of paradigm are we living in again that we receive this? And it's like, no, we should, the more valuable it is. And it's not based on time. It's not, oh, that's an hour. You didn't ask the you know, like that painter, how many hours did it take you to paint that picture? You didn't ask the chef, like, how many hours did it take you to make my dinner, when you pay more for something that takes the same amount of time as something else? You ask, what is the quality of it? What is the value of it? And in our seat of offering, may we be connected to the depth of the value and our own value of what we want to receive from the work that we're doing. And in my experience, I don't know if yours has felt the same, but when we stand fully in that, it reflects that back and then some. And it's really incredible to feel like it's not even the income coming in, it's the shedding of that story that thought something was so true, was so committed to something, and then to see like it's actually not true. That's so awesome. That is such a liberating feeling.
Oh yeah. I don't know about you, but if you've ever like invested in something that you knew was for you and everything in you was like, I want this, but the money feels like a lot, I'm scared. You invest in it and guess what happens? Like, you are provided for.
To the point where in teacher training, where it can be a significant investment for people to put a few thousand dollars into something, or like the 300 is more than that, you know, it's more bigger investment. It's even when people have said, like, I don't know how I'm going to pay for this. And I've said to them, well, like, is it in alignment? And if they are like, yes, and I feel that, and they feel that, I stand in that with them, even on the receiving end. And so then I trust it will show up. I've not been in it. I've 30 some odd teacher trainings, and I've not had somebody, unless they were out of like integrity and they're like, I'm not going to pay an amount, you know, and that's happened, I think, one time, you know, but otherwise it always shows up. We are never not provided for. We are never not supported as humans. Right. And so to stand in that, the true security isn't even something you can gain, and it's not something you can lose, because it is something that you are. And if you meet your own ground, the ground will always lift you. It is always supporting you. Like you said, I'm still here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's our responsibility, which is like, oh, talk about taking your power back, like as big as I can dream and as much as I can expand, then it's up to me. Love that. And also scary and great.
It's amazingly scary and beautiful. Terrifyingly beautiful surrender. Yeah. Right. Look, Mom, no hands. We're not going to white knuckle this thing anymore.
No, because that never really helps, does it?
Yeah. So that said, thank you, thank you, thank you for joining me for this episode of Healing the Divide. What a ride. This was an awesome conversation. We got into so many powerful things. And for our listeners, thank you for being on the ride with us. I hope that you have extracted some value. If you feel called to pick up anything that you put down in order to be here with us, I just invite you to pick up or put down or choose consciously what is in alignment with your deepest truth. And I so respect and value and appreciate you, Emily, for all that you do and all that you represent and who you are in this world. It's undeniable light in a way that doesn't limit. And that's really powerful. And I feel grateful to be able to share you with our listeners and viewers. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's just always a treat to converse with you. I appreciate you so much. And thanks for continuing to do the work out there.
You froze on me there. So I don't know if there was like a long, prolonged silence or not, but I'm going to roll with it. We're going to leave it right in there as the synchronicity of the universe.
Perfect.
Inviting a moment to connect. So thank you, thank you, thank you, my friend. And see you next time on Healing the Divide.